Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today, we're going to be discussing the U.S. migration policies, immigration policies, and its implications for Africa and African population. I'm joined by a very special guest, Dr. Ladotun Awosusi. Dr. Awosusi is a research, currently a research fellow at the University of Arkansas, Little Rock. And he's also formerly faculty lecturer and researcher at the University of Fort Hare in South Africa. Oladotun, it's a pleasure to have you join me today. And I look forward to a very exciting conversation with you.
Thank you, Dr. Michael. It's really exciting. And I believe it's going to be rewarding joining you today.
Brilliant. So yeah. Let's start off. So we've seen in the US with the current administration, we've seen a lot of activities with migration. We've seen with ICE, which is the, but basically we've seen where ICE is targeting some unwanted, let's say, party targets, illegal unwanted immigrants. But what I want to look at in terms of Africa, how it affects African students, African researchers, and people of Africa in America. So let's start off from that. How do you think Trump's immigration policies, is it targeting Africans? Are Africans affected by it?
Okay, I want to start by saying that every country, every nation of the world has a right to the protection of their territory. They have the sovereignty right to protect their territory and to determine what goes in and comes into the country. But in doing that, there's a need to consider what I called human security. There's a need to anchor whatever you are doing as a leader, as a policymaker, or as a president on humanitarianism. That is, humanitarianism should be at the core of whatever policy you are doing. That said, the last 10 months I've witnessed a sort of change in the migration landscape of the globe, and specifically in America. Since the coming of the President Trump, he has a policy which he called America, putting America first. So that policy is actually rooted in nationalism and populism. That is, we are rooted in a nationalistic and populist ideology, focused on protecting national security or enhancing national security, protecting the job industry, and making America great again, as everybody will say. So in the last 10 months since January, different change has actually come. We have seen different cases, different policies be enacted by President Donald Trump, not targeted at Africa. I will not say it's targeted at Africa. Like I said, it's aimed at enhancing the U.S. national security, promoting American global reputation, and ensuring that its native citizens, local citizens, have access to equitable job opportunities. So I will not say Agricultural North Africa is part of national policy aiming to make America great again.
Okay, I'm happy you said that. Again, we can see that Africa, you know, definitely, or Africans are definitely caught in that crossfire. Yeah. And when you mention "Make America Great Again," and you talk about nationalism and populism, and but in talking about that, we've also seen the, from what you said, it might not be a direct target at Africans, which, you know, be subjective. But we can also see that Africa is also featured in that calculation or in that policy in terms of, one, whether a bilateral agreement with certain African countries to accept asylum seekers. I know Nigeria rejected that deal, but I think Ghana recently has accepted, I think Rwanda as well. And I think there's another country as well. So how do you see that relations in terms of Africa picturing in terms of that in that bilateral sort of receiving asylum, rejected or asylum seekers coming to Africa? Does that all go well?
So I want to believe, just the way America romanced or toasted Africa, America equally toasted many countries of the world, in South America, probably Asia. So the world is a world of power, and it's based and it's anchored on diplomacy and negotiation. So I want to believe America proposed to African countries, and for reasons best known to those countries like Rwanda, Uganda, recently Ghana, for reasons best known to them, they accepted the offer to accept deportees, asylum seekers, and the rest of them. So it's a game of negotiation. And it depends on the country, it depends on what they feel is best for them. So I want to believe, I was listening to the president of Ghana when he was saying he was not bullied. It was proposed to him. It was based on negotiation. And for reason best known to him, and he accepted the offer to accept West African immigrants. I mean, so to say, undocumented immigrants that will be deported from America into Africa. So I want to believe that is a game of power. So
we can look at history and look at recent such negotiations and understand why that it's not far. Is, you know, the there's obvious economic gain. We saw with Rwanda with the United Kingdom here last summer, where Rwanda was paid huge millions, you know, to accept to accept stuff. And again, we've seen this where, you know, we had the crisis in 2015, the migration crisis, the Middle East migration crisis, where Europe was trying to negotiate with Africa as a continent, the AU or whatever individual, but to accept migrants or asylum seekers and all of that. But now you've while we can talk about undocumented migrants, okay, if I use your word, every country has the right to protect itself. But how about people with legal documents, with visas? Because we've also heard recently where in Nigeria, I was listening to Wole Soyinka's experience where he's been called to come and those that already hold visas to come and then be re-interviewed. And then again, where the United States Americans say you having visa does not guarantee so how do you see that? Because again, you said there's no, okay, I'll come back to that. Do you think, okay, let me ask the question, do you think there's a racial element to these policies?
I won't say there's a racial element to these policies. I would rather say there is a power imbalance, poor negotiations, poor diplomacy to all of this. So I wouldn't strike America. America has the right, like I said, to determine whoever they allow entrance into their country. So the onus now lies with the country. lies with their negotiation power. So as a country in Africa, there are a lot of, coming to say that a lot of other countries in Africa who are not affected by all of this mess. Do you agree with me? So that countries, we've been hearing of case of revocations in Nigeria. The question is, how is Nigerian government reacting to the different policy, immigration policy reform in America? What is the negotiation power of Nigerian government? What is their focus? Are they really in negotiation, in looking for a legal pathway to ensure that they have a strong bilateral agreement with the United States of America, not only the United States of America, even with Canada and United other countries of the world. So it's mostly based on the receiving country, on the other, not necessarily America. It's a function of the country. So if you get it right, for instance, if you get it right, you have the resources I need, you have everything I need, you have the you have the progress I need, I want to engage with you. I will need you. So if there were clear terms between us, there were clear bilateral agreement between us, there were clear diplomatic negotiation between us, I wouldn't be doing that to your citizens. I'll put your citizens first. I will treat your citizens right. In all of these, there are a lot of countries in the world who are not affected, even in Africa country. So it's a question of domestic mess. Permit to use that word. It's a question of we are not right as a people. So if we put our house rights, if we put our home rights, if we strengthen our domestic landscape, if we fix our economy, we wouldn't be facing all of this we are facing. So I understand that America favor more of nationalistic policies. But believe you me, America still has a various bilateral negotiations and agreements with different countries, and their citizens are not affected no matter what. I understand there's a global instability coming out of this. Or I can tell you, like I said, a lot of countries are strengthening their bilateral agreement, bilateral relationship with America, and they may be affected, but not seriously affected. So
I'll come back to you since we're already talking about how Africa it's has not having its house in order, and how that can impact on how from what I see, if I interpret what you're saying, is how somebody respects you if you have something to offer to them.
Exactly.
Now you're saying something that which I want to ask, but let me ask this question. The question would be, one, how is Africa respond? How should Africa respond to this? So based on what you're saying, so you've already started saying Africa is this. So how should they respond? How are they responding?
The response, I'm not saying it's specific or a diplomatic or a diplomatic response from many African countries. Thank God for the president of South Africa. So the president of South Africa, the guy is I would call the guy the Bismarck of Africa. So he understands diplomacy. You remember recently when he had...
Are you talking about the when he was ambushed in the White House?
When Trump was about having issue with him, the guy took up... The guy deployed diplomatic intrigues to reach out to Donald Trump. What is going on? I believe African country can do the same thing. I'm not seeing any diplomatic response from any African countries. The only thing you can do at this point is to foster, is to stretch a arm of diplomacy
sorry to cut you. When you say diplomacy, can you just clarify that and you can continue?
I'm talking about negotiation. I'm talking about investing in legal pathways to migration, having a kind of labor agreement with America, not just America, with other countries of the world. So there is the issue of what is it called? Recently, they reduced. An average Nigerian visa, an average Nigerian applying for visa in America, an average Nigerian applying for U.S. visa in Nigeria now, gets just 3 months, single entry 3 months. How did the Nigerian government respond to that? I was expecting the Nigerian government maybe to take steps. President may not necessarily visit America, to reach out to the president of America, reach out to their ambassadors use the ambassador as a leverage to reach out to the president of America, have a negotiation, negotiate with them. Of course, America loves Nigerians. They want Nigerian brains. They want a lot of Nigerians to come in. But the government seems not, the government seems comfortable with that because in their own, they don't want anybody to jump out. They don't want Nigerians to move out. So for them, it's like an answered prayer that, they don't want their daughter to go. Yes, we've been trying to shut the door against Nigerians. We're trying to shut the door against medical doctors from going to the US. Now it's an opportunity for to climb. And now what we've been looking for has finally come. So because of that, they didn't react in expected way to negotiate. How can this thing be reversed? How can we ensure we have a strengthened bilateral relationship to ensure that Nigerians who want to travel to America, Nigerian students who want to study to America, still get a year or 2 years visa to study and come back? That should be negotiation, a clear negotiation between the government of Nigeria and the government of the United States of America.
I see your point, but there's a little problem that I would want you to see if you can see the bigger picture. So because from how you've put it, from what I'm seeing, it seems to be, you correct me if I'm wrong, it seems to be like the burden, the onus or the burden of whatever lies with the African government. America has the right to do what it has to do. The African government should reach out and negotiate and that. So the way I'm seeing it, maybe it's not intentional. You're presenting this migration issue as a one way, rather than something that is mutually beneficial. So I'll give you an example. So in the United Kingdom, or even in Europe as a whole, they have an aging population, because I've written quite a bit on migration as well. They have an aging population. So and then they need labor. It's just like in America where they might say, this labor, Donald Trump recently said it about the farmers, about the Americans. When he said, even if it is, they don't have, there's no replacement in the American labor system. So in the United Kingdom recently, they had this care, this the way you have a lot of Nigerians, a lot of people come. Now they shut it. In sometime last 2 years or last year, they needed teachers, and they reached out and wanted teachers from Nigeria, Zimbabwe, Jamaica, 5 countries. Once they get it, they shut it. So it looks like now Africa is being used. Africa is being used for its labor, and then they shut it. So I don't want to, so I don't know if you see that and see, can Africa see that migration is not just one way? It is one that benefits these people, and Africa itself might be an unknowing victim in all of this, because we're looking at how destabilization in these countries, the activities of this, of the US or China or whatever in this, let's say DRC for instance, might be causing instability that is then influencing people to come over. And so I wanted to look at it in a broader sense. I don't know if you agree with me, if you can provide a
moment. Okay, let me say this. Migration is a two-way thing. Like I said earlier on, I said America needs Nigerians, America needs Africans. So equally, Africa needs America. So in order to ensure what I call brain circulations, so that at least there could be exchanges of professionals, skills and the rest of them. And let me equally say that migration is the future of the world. To understand migration itself is to understand the dynamics of the global community, the systemic dynamic of the global community, in the sense that no country of the world can actually stand on their own. The practice or the idea of isolationism does not fit into the fabrics, into the dynamics of the international society itself. So migration is the future of the world, is going to be the future of many countries of the world, the future of their workforce, of their security, what have you. That said, see, I talked about negotiation earlier on, because I was not trying to put Africa under the box. No, I wouldn't do that, because I know Africa is a power, is an intellectual powerhouse of the entire world. And in fact, Africa is an intellectual power, is an intellectual powerhouse in America. Of course, different recent statistics show that Nigerian migrants are the most educated in America. So I'm in America, so I can testify to that. So my point in essence is this. Good. America is trying to protect their sovereignty, trying to protect their security. Right. They're trying to protect their industries. They're trying to protect all of these. And equally, Africa too is trying to leverage migration as well to develop the economy, to enhance their social economic landscape, and probably to ensure an efficient exchange of ideas. So in all of this, it's not a one-way thing. Okay, America said, this is what I want. These are the paths I want to follow. I know America is not doing a lot of things right. We're still going to what America should do. America, I understand that America is goofing in a lot of respects, but I'm talking about on this part of Africa now. You were asking that what should be the reaction of Africa in this regard. I was saying negotiation you can't start protesting against America. Of course, you can't pitch a war against America at this point. And of course, you understand the very dynamics of the power dynamics of the world. So the easiest thing to do at this point in response, in one way, is to negotiate a legal migration pathway, a legal migration.
Let's put it this. Let's look at it this. Okay, go on.
On the external approach, is to work on your domestic landscape. Is to work on your economy. Once you work on your economy, people would want to go and export, like we say, their skills abroad. So that is one way. So I was. Look at the internal, the external approach or response to all of this. Like I said, I've not seen any African country respond positively so far. All we see is media noise. Always there is bloggers taking all of this to make money. I've not really seen a proactive or what we call a diplomatic response from any African country.
Again, we've looked. Another thing we've tackled in the migration myth, which I called there's a recent short piece that I wrote, the migration myth, where we looked at the actual migration within Africa. 85% of migration within Africa is within Africa.
It's within Africa, yeah. Very common.
So should again, we can look at it and say, no matter how this is exaggerated, the migration out of Africa to is the numbers are exaggerated because the larger proportion of the migration is within. So how should Africa, I know you started the domestic, and again, you're looking at that at the individual country level, but at the continental level, we see with the African free trade, and we see some countries, Kenya, Uganda, in having this free trade team. Should Africa have a concerted response, not just to America, but in terms of using that as a wake-up call to build its own market and capitalize on its own force. That America, Africa should be about 1.something billion people, and as they say, you know, it's a young and build its own industry and trade among and, you know, do all of that. Do you think that should be spark that kind of like approach?
Thank you, Dr. Michael. See, if your home is not in order, if your home is disorganized, the outsiders won't take you serious. Outsiders will victimize you. So, like we see in Africa, of course, many continents, many big powers of the world are victimizing, taking advantage of this disorderliness within African continent. African continent is totally disordered. There is no everybody. There is this nationalistic idea among many African countries, even Nigeria. I did my PhD. My PhD was on the border policies of Nigeria and South Africa. I did a comparison. I discovered that South Africa and Nigeria, they are the same thing. Nigeria is so nationalistic. The African Union in 2020 established the free movement protocol. Up to now, Nigeria does not even have free movement for African countries. South Africa does not have free movement for African countries. If you want to go, if you as a typical African person, I was listening to a podcast or an interview with Dangote, this affluent man in Africa, the richest man in Africa, so to say. When he was saying, he said he needs, as an African, he needs 35 visas to visit African countries. It's not a lie. I visited Kenya recently. I applied for visa, even in spite of the fact that they said a free visa for Africans in Kenya. As a Nigerian, I don't know, maybe they've changed it recently. As a Nigerian, you still have to apply for visa to visit Kenya. You see, apart from the West African countries, the 15 West African countries before Niger, before the Sahel, the Niger and the rest of them left ECOWAS, all other African countries, every Nigerian visiting other African countries have to apply. They need to apply for visa to visit other countries. That's it, which the implication of that is that if I want to do business within Africa, I cannot do it because of these borders. And we call ourselves Africa. So I see a lot of hypocrisy on the part of Africa when we shut borders against ourselves, when we shut borders on ourselves. I was in South Africa for a while. I can tell you the border policies, border includes migration. The border policies of South Africa is so nationalistic. The border policy of Nigeria is so nationalistic. It's focused on self-security rather than regional security. Hence, of course, you are a security person. You did a lot of work on security. Hence, various instability in African countries. Because a lot of criminal gangs now are not taking advantage of lack of free entry to constitute security mess across the borders of various African countries. So we need to put our house in order. So before the world can take us serious, America cannot take us serious when we're not taking ourselves serious. I need a visa to visit Cape Verde. My wife was talking to me recently, we should visit Cape Verde maybe in December. I was talking to her that Cape Verde, I don't understand what is happening in Cape Verde. From what I've seen on social media, there are a lot of people visit Cape Verde, some of them get arrested. So, yes, me speaking to you, I've been arrested and put in a cell in one of the African countries I was visiting. I was going to collect data and I was coming, he said, because I don't have a yellow card. They arrested me. I don't want to mention the name of the country because of the here.
I want to travel Africa, like physically travel Africa. So I listened to this experience. I was watching there's that Ghanaian guy there, Wago Mama, what's his name? The guy that you know does that, and he was quite an expose. Where there's a corridor, there's an East African corridor, whereby five countries in that corridor, Zambia, Botswana, Namibia, all of that. And then there's a visa. There's a one single entry that an European can enter, but the people from that place, the Africans cannot go through.
You cannot get a
visa. Like, you're here, you're rally, so you can't go there. So it's I know where to come out.
An average European and has more assets into Africa than an average African.
I want you to comment on this. Do you think this has it's twofold, this question. Do you think there's a colonial or mentality or legacy that is operating there? And then again, the next question would be, you've mentioned America's policy under populism, nationalism, but there's another thing which I think you've left out. I don't think you don't know it. You've left it out. That most of the US policy under Trump is actually driven by geopolitics to counteract Chinese influence. So I wanted to command how Africa again is finding itself to be the theater of such disruption, of such geopolitical competition between the superpowers and the middle powers. How do you know, is Africa used as a pawn in all of this?
I mentioned that when I was introducing, I mentioned that that's one of the objective of all of these is to actually make America great again. What is the meaning of making America great again? Is to recenter America in the global map. Of course, to protect American reputation. You know, there is a proverb in Yoruba that says, where two elephants fight,
the grass.
We can't dispute the fact that there is a geopolitical tension between America and China, of course. You know, China now, China have actually gained entrance because of the corrupt leaders, the inept leaders. Some of them cannot really think, they can't see beyond their nose to see the agenda of China. So they open their border to China. In fact, if you look at Nigerian market now, I was talking to somebody, Nigerian market have been taken over by many Chinese country. Somebody was talking to me sometimes ago, you know, say this OP, that's an OP, that is a banking, that's an OP in Nigeria. He said he didn't know that OP was not owned by Nigerian. OP wasn't owned by Nigerian. You get me now? So China has taken over the African market, so to say, and that has given China an advantage in Africa. So I wouldn't say that it's an opportunity for America to strike back, to say, no, you can't be befriending my major competitor, and I still open my border to you. I wouldn't want to say probably that is the idea behind that. It may be an underlying factor. Like you said, indisputably, the geopolitical politics, the bid to remap, to be recentered in the global map is a major objective, it's a major factor to the different reforms, different tariffs. You know, beyond migrations, you know, there are tariff bans on many countries of the world, even with the immediate neighbor, Canada and other countries, even now. So I agree with you perfectly.
To just add up to that and then add a full-on question. So like Raleigh said, but there's something you mentioned that I'm going to ask you to clarify. You know, when you talk about Africa putting its house in order and all that, so you should know this as well as an international edition scholar, that Africa has always been a non-aligned, I've always maintained non-alignment status to geopolitics, even during the Cold War. You know, they were non-aligned. And what that means is Africa can do business with whoever they can do. So because you mentioned something which is what I'm going to ask. You mentioned, said the inept and corrupt leaders, we can argue against that. But you said that has given Chinese inroad into Africa, which is what I want to challenge you a bit on that. Do you think it's necessarily that? Do you think that could be partly so, but do you think it's necessarily that? Or do you think that, as many people say, many scholars say, and I agree, that every empire will definitely come to an end. It was the British Empire in the 19th century. It's been America Empire since the half of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it looks like at this point in time, we can say this is, we don't have a hegemon. But we can say that China is headed, but we don't have a hegemon. So all of this wrangling is to like you say, make America great is to maintain or to come out as an indisputable, you know, hegemon in that. But in doing that, Africa also has a chance to not be on the sidelines. And we've seen some alignment and disalignment. We've seen the expansion of the BRICS, including Nigeria, including other countries. We've seen in Senegal, we've seen people calling for reform of the Security Council, Africa being there. So can you say Africa is making stride, but we need to do more? Can you look at how Africa can or should not see this as a crisis, not see America's policies or European immigration crisis as a negative thing, but actually see it as something to use to negotiate or to motivate itself, to position itself for that change that is coming?
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. I get your perspective. And you said Africa practice a non-aligned movement or is Africa is non-aligned. If you look at it critically, are we really non-aligned? That's the question. Are we really non-aligned? Looking at the very indices of non-alignment itself. So, like this man in Burkina Faso, you said, I don't want to do, you don't want to do with the West, but you are running to the harm of the East. So it's like jumping from fry pan to fire. That is how I would see the entire thing. So I wouldn't want to say that Africa should now use this opportunity because America is now closing its door So now Africa should now leverage the opportunity to now advance toward China or Russia. Of course, Russia has been, if you follow the migration trend, Russia, if you recently, they don't make noise. Russia has been recruiting a lot of young Nigerians, a lot of young Nigerian brains. I can tell you, I have quite a number of friends now who are studying in Russia through their open door scholarships. They open their door to Africa as well. They want the brains of Africa. All countries of the world want the brains of Africa. But the truth is, the reality is that every one of them only want to use Africa for their own economic benefits. So the pathway to Africa is to reorder ourselves as a continent. The first part of doing that is to ensure what I call borderless border. Because if African practice what is called borderless border, trust me, there's going to be immediate impacts of that borderlessness. Because when I have opportunity to travel to South Africa to go and trade, as a South African, I have opportunity to go to Kenya to go and trade without any fear, without any fault. I don't have to go and follow through the process of applying for visa and I have to wait for 3 months or wait for 1 month or whatsoever to get a visa. But I can equally book a ticket. Do you know flight within Africa is most expensive?
Ask yourself. Yeah, from Ghana to Ghana to Nigeria is a lot of money. We're talking thousands.
I was in the Gambia. I lectured with the university in the Gambia for 3 years. I speak to you, I have a lot of Nigerians in Gambia who cannot travel back to Nigeria because of high cost of flights. Meanwhile, you look at fly within Europe. I was in Europe to fly from Germany to France. What are they cost?
You can spend £50 in all these cheap budget airlines. Yeah.
To fly within America, for instance, you know, America from Arkansas, where I am, to Minnesota is more than from Nigeria to South Africa. But if you check the flight now, you see the flight from here to Minnesota. You know, it's very, very, very cheap compared to the amount to fly from South Africa to Nigeria. If you want to fly from South Africa to Nigeria now, you cannot have less than 1.5 million, if I'm not exaggerating. In fact, if I'm not under costing. So Africa needs to, we need to reorder ourselves. We need to reorder ourselves.
But we're coming to the
ground. In all of this, I'm sorry. The opportunity I can say in all of this is to implement our, we have policies. The problem of Africa is not lack of policies. Our problem is implementation and genuinely following through the implementation of those policies.
I agree with you. We're coming to the end now, and I'll just make a few comments and, you know, give you opportunity to come. You see, the way I see it, and I'm sure you know this as well, maybe you're being a bit measured, is there are definitely internal issues as much as there are external issues, and you can separate one from another. So the problem of Africa on the internal level, leadership and all of that, is a constant. We understand that. But then again, you look at how the globe, you mentioned migration, you're saying something, migration is a global stuff. The same way the market is connected, and you can see how Donald Trump's tariffs and how he was talking about Lesotho, whatever is happening in Lesotho, one tariff is affecting Lesotho and America. No, but some people don't even know what Lesotho is. So that tells you that Africa on its own, you see what's going on in DRC as well. I'm just saying, maybe we can look at being sympathetic towards Africa a bit and say, see what's going on in DRC, the geopolitical competition for the minerals. Even you mentioned the Sahel, you mentioned Burkina Faso. The Trump administration has recently reached out. We just did a podcast to offer security cooperation for mineral deals. So in my own, what I'm currently writing on, I said, it has always been naive to think that people will intervene, come and help you for no gain. Like there's no free lunch in Freetown. When people are coming, they're coming. So the thing that has happened with the West is when in the past we were given aid, but that is not the whole complete picture. They're taking over, and that's created a problem in the Sahel. But with Russia and China, there is no confusion. We are giving you this. We want this. Okay. So, and I think the West is also now Trump who himself is personality-wise is a transactional guy, is using that approach as well. So again, looking at all of this, how do you think Africa, if you conclude with this, should be pragmatic? Like, what should it tender you? Because you've been talking about negotiation, you're talking about diplomacy, you talk about the Tinubu government. No, what should Africa say and say, okay, we've got this, you want this, we want this? And when I say African, I'm not talking about the leaders, because the majority of African leaders are selfish with their selfish interests. I'm talking about Africa as a whole, is people, is civil society. How can they demand? How can they make their government demand? What would this look like? Let's conclude with that.
If I should get you, demand what, in essence? Can you be more clear?
So in throughout our conversation, you've been talking about the African government needs to do more in terms of migration. America has the right to do this. The Nigerian government didn't, when they put that kind of like migration restriction, the government didn't go and negotiate and go through the ambassador. You were saying something like that. So I'm not saying to you now, is Africa not leveraging its power? Is it not leveraging its resources? Is it not leveraging that? So we can then again say, oh, the leaders are corrupt. They could do that for their personal interests. So I say, let's extend it beyond the leaders and talk about the civil society, the youth, the other. How can Africa leverage its power? Because Africa does have power.
Of course.
Its power in this migration dynamics to present itself as, no, we are not just the underdog. We can respond, you know, in an equal way, or in a way, you know, in a significant way. Or how can, you know, just broadly, I'll just give you 2-3 minutes to just, you know, give a broad a conclusion.
Thank you so much. Africa, we have power, especially we have economic power. The first thing is to harness our economic power. How do we harness our economic power? We can only harness our economic power by having responsive followers and responsive leaders. So we have everything it takes. So my argument, my thesis so far is that the problem of Africa is not just leadership. We equally have followers problem. So if our economic resources, our human capital, and all of this are going to be harnessed, so the first thing is that we must have responsive leaders. After that, then that should be what we called, that should be regional mobility agreements. Like I said, there should be regional mobility agreements. We've been dragging. I have written quite a number of articles. Different scholars, and probably you have commented on the need to have a borderless, free movement of people within Africa. Do you agree with me that it costs less for Africans to school within Africa than schooling abroad? Do you agree with me?
Yeah.
It costs less. 100%. So I know how much it costs me to study for my PhD in South Africa. In fact, it's more or less free. In fact, I'm not sure I paid anything in South Africa. So I know what my counterparts studying for PhD, my friends studying for PhD in America, I know how much they are paying. That we have everything that we need. Our problem is that inability to announce and judicially use this. And if you want to do this, there must be responsiveness on the part of the followers, on the part of the leaders. And I will call it a reorientation. Our orientation as a people, as Africans, our orientation is very poor. There should be public education of who we are as a people, of what we are capable of doing, of what we have, and the power we have. We are so blessed with intellectual capitals. We are so blessed with economic capital, and it's a shame that in spite of our resources, in spite of the intellectual progress we have, in spite of all of this that we have, we are still the victim of not just the West, but the victim of the world, of the global powers. So if the global powers want to annex their power, the next thing to stretch their hands into those disorganized, disorder people there. Let's stretch our hands to them. Let's make a policy that will bring them in. After we bring them in, let's close the door. Let's get their good brain. Let them get their good doctors. Let's get their good this. And after we've gotten what we need, let's shut the door against them. So if we don't put our house in order, I still hand on that. We keep subjecting ourselves to the politics of both the West and the East of the world. So I will stop at that.
that's an amazing response, and I'll just make one comment before I complete.
Sure.
That comment is in my last book. I don't know if you've seen it.
Nigeria's fourth
republic, a militarized democracy.
I've not read it actually.
I'll send you the e-copy. I'm glad. If you want to review it, I can link you up to the publisher. They can send you a copy if you want to.
Okay.
Yeah, I can link you up to the publisher.
Okay.
But the one of the things you mentioned that is good is education. You see, and I said that, and I hold our academics, our intellectuals responsible, because people that are miseducated or uneducated cannot move forward. So what has happened? Let's speak Nigeria, for instance, is we've so much downgraded our education that we don't, like you earlier said, we need a reorientation, re-education. The educational system and all of that needs to happen. And I know in the 80s, 70s, I met a professor in Boston 11 years ago, and he used to lecture in Ife. And this was solid. I'm saying 70s, 80s, 90s in Nigeria, education, people come from afar to come and study. They were solid education. We need to get back. So that's one angle that we don't really put our lens on and put pressure on that and say that is our way out. And I'm glad you mentioned that is our way out. Proper education, re-education. But listen, Dotsun, this has been an amazing conversation. I wish we can go on and on and on.
It's good with you. Everything has to come to an end.
We definitely keep up and collaborate and do a lot of stuff. I was supposed to come to
if you have any work you'd like me to contribute in, please feel free to reach out to me.
I will definitely
be part of it. And I'm glad what you're doing, and you're doing amazing. I went to your website, and I was really, really, really impressed. You are doing a great job.
That's more, and I'll tell you maybe in the future, cost of time, the motivation behind this, and we'll talk. Yeah. I was looking, I didn't have your number. I thought they shared about. If you can share your number as well on my LinkedIn, then we can talk.
Okay, we'll share some other time.
We talk another time. But anyways, it's been a pleasure, and. Wish you all the best, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah.
Yeah, bye. Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode. As usual, join me to thank our guest, Dr. Ladotun Awosusi, for the brilliant conversation we've had. I trust you've enjoyed. And stay tuned, and I'll see you next week.